If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Beings in the bliss of immortal life, I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. Today, our seminar is Immortality. The Immortal Masters and Awakening Beyond the Illusion of Mortality. So if you're ready, take a deep breath and clear yourself for this reception. Connect with the highest part of your consciousness that you can possibly integrate. And breathe it in with your intention with the next breath. Deep breath. Flood your entire biosphere with your blessedness, with your immortal presence, with your authentic empowered self. That eternal part of you that is the creative extension into time, space, and beyond of the absolute creator. And let's chant Hue three times to clear the mental body and to create a clear, uncluttered receptivity for this evening's transmission. Deep breath. You. You. And just ask that only that which is for your highest good be received tonight to your highest rate, and that which would be as a door opening to greater awareness and possibility for each one. So if you ever thought about immortality, what exactly is immortality, do you know? Some say it's a continuity of conscious awareness from one state to the next, from birth to life, and to the passage of death onto the other dimensions. Some believe it's a preservation or an ability to actually prolong the life indefinitely. Many yogis in India have practices which succeed to various degrees depending on the person and the approach. There is a system called Kaya Kalpa, which is an Ayurvedic Himalayan series of herbal ingestions that are attributed to the prolongation of life, in some cases for 100 years. But tonight we want to talk about the practicality of realizing that you're already immortal. It's not something you're moving into in the sense of having to attain it. My approach is always one of topside down, taking the truth and stepping it down to where we get a concept of ourselves as we are forever. And then the part of us in time, space, that seems to be awakening to that part. So we're going to do that tonight. Some of you I know are very, very interested in immortality with various degrees of understanding what that's all about. Some of you are very interested in ascension, shifting the vibration to where you can live at a higher state of consciousness. And many of you in fact, probably all of you, are involved with some degree of developing more conscious awareness of yourself as a body of light and wearing bodies of light. So probably most of you are also well aware of the rather extraordinary and would have to say ludicrous attempt science is making to prolong the life of the physical body and the brain, as if the physical body and the brain constituted your reality. But having no real understanding of the self, the Atma, and the vehicles through which that Supreme Spirit that you are operates, they're left with only studying the vestiges and trying to prolong the life of that which is only a means for the soul to express on the physical plane. Trying to prolong the brain into immortality or the physical vehicle is trying to make your cell phone immortal or a garment hanging in your closet. Good luck. But God bless them. Eventually, they'll begin to realize that we are not the body, we're not the brain. These are simply vehicles through which the higher components of consciousness choose to manifest, and that only in the physical dimension. So, immortality is a fact. It is truth itself, and all, without exception, shall attain full realization of their immortality. Those who have attained conscious awareness of immortality are known by various terms. The immortals, ascended masters, chiranjivis, the amaravasis, the amartyas, the deathless ones, being some of those terms that are used. Some masters, to give you some context here of what happens when you attain a certain level of let's say, completion with the Earth School lessons. Some of them choose to stay on Earth, and such a one is then called the Deathless Guru, or Mahavatar Babaji, who is said to be thousands of years old, having been here at the time of Lord Krishna over 5,000 years ago. Now, you can read about Babaji in Yogananda's book, Autobiography of a Yogi. Other masters choose to go to more advanced planets such as Venus, Jupiter, and others, or to the great central sun, Venus. Excuse me, the great, we have to call it the real great central sun, not Alcyon, but the great central sun or greater central sun, which is the sun star Sirius. Some masters choose to work upon the subtle planes, the astral, causal, mental, etheric, soul, or within the God realms. But most create what's been called a Maya Virupa, or illusory, mentally created form to appear in this particular physical dimension. I've seen many of these Maya Virupas of the Lord Maitreya, for example, and some of the Master Jesus as well. So they can take any form. In fact, if you saw the movie Contact, when the girl was taken to, I believe it was Lyra, and she met her father, the father figure was a Maya Virupa that was created so she would feel comfortable with that encounter. Obviously, it was not her father, but this spiritual being that appeared to her as the father. That would be an example of a Maya Virupa. So spirit always accommodates our, let's say, our place of greatest loving, greatest comfort, That's the graciousness of Divine Spirit. It can take any form to manifest its love to you and its caring. So some masters work more in refined energy bodies. Many choose to adopt a densified astral body. In fact, I'm given to understand that some of the masters that are now living in the outer world have actually done that. They've densified their astral body. We have a good example of that densified astral body with Omnic Onyx, who is from Venus, in her densified astral body, which is now physical. It's a lowering of vibration, in other words. But in the case of these masters, the body that they function in, the densified astral body, is just slightly out of the range of normal, or let's say average, eyesight. Now, extraterrestrial masters generally operate in etheric or Zohar bodies, which are highly advanced electrical vehicles, let's call them that. And that's why they're invisible to the average eyesight. They're present, but just out of the range of our optics. Some extraterrestrials are ascended and immortalized, whereas others are not. Some are at a level only slightly more advanced than Earth humanity, and some have great technological advancement, but very little spiritual advancement. Those are the ones you have to look out for, not get in their way. And so it varies tremendously, as well as how we actually choose to express ourselves when we have attained that level of high initiation or mastery. It becomes more and more a matter of personal choice in the sense of having more of a conscious creative hand in how you manifest your being in this dimension and others. Now, the teachings of immortality were brought to Earth originally by the great star elders and formed the basis for the earliest mystery schools and initiatory rites, which was basically to return people to conscious immortality. So the teachings of traveling as consciousness beyond the physical body was taught, and that was the purpose of the Great Pyramid and other ancient structures. The Step Pyramid at Saqqara, for example, is the oldest of all and was originally a temple of the sound current, where advanced light and sound travel techniques out of body were taught to Atlantean initiates. Over time, obviously, the original teachings became muddied and the keys to conscious immortality were lost in physical rituals and mummification to preserve, again, the physical body. So present scientific attempts to preserve the body and brain are simply modern-day attempts at what is basically mummification. But without the knowledge the Egyptians had, at least, of the ka, or soul, and its ability to travel beyond the body. The majority of modern scientists still have yet to discover the soul as a unit of consciousness that operates through the body and brain, and also quite apart from both as pure awareness. It's interesting now we are getting some photographs, some videos on YouTube that show the soul leaving the body at death and freaking some people out. I don't know why it should be a cause of great celebration. There's your proof. Something that looks like a replica of the physical body is leaving that physical body at the moment of death. It's the soul, or should we say the astral body more accurately. But again, that which is propelling the astral body is the soul. So the brain has served purely as a relay receiver, transmitter. for the consciousness operating through it, which would be the soul or spirit. So the brain receives from that higher level of consciousness via the mind, which is located out of the body entirely. It's important to understand the only thing that's located in the physical dimension is the inert vehicle that we call the physical body, entirely inert, and the brain, which is totally inert without the conscious presence of the consciousness operating through it. Where is the mind? The mind is located upon the mental plane, reflected as one of the subtle bodies surrounding the physical body. Clairvoyants can see it as what appears to be golden light or sometimes golden sparkles around the upper part of the head. So only the physical body and brain are here in the physical dimension and therefore are subject to time, which causes the deterioration and the wearing out of these physical forms, as it does all forms in the physical, which are subject to the law of time. All other parts of us exist beyond the body and other dimensions. So important to understand that. That is why we exist as spiritual beings quite apart from the physical shell and its receiver-transmitter device, the brain. As spiritual beings, we exist untouched by whatever seems to affect the physical body and brain. It matters very little, if at all, to the soul, whether it has a physical body and brain or not. Eternal life goes on regardless of the time-bound dream. Pause and consider that, if you will. The fact that what happens to the body and brain neither affects nor is any concern to you as soul. The immortals know that and consciously choose where and in which subtle body they will appear, if any body is required, for they can operate in and out of visible form at will. They operate as free consciousness. Therefore, we must conclude that form is always optional for omnipresent awareness. And God consciousness or omnipresent awareness is what the highest masters that we would call the immortals have. They have attained that state. So two of the most limiting factors that bind and confine anyone on earth are identifying with a physical body and identifying with the mind content or thought. These limiting beliefs and identifications must be clearly discerned and dissolved in the light of the soul or higher awareness. So the mind is but a matrix of human interpretations, desires, and confusion. And this is co-projected and shared like a stream, like a river. And as such, in soul awareness, you can rise above the collective mind stream and dissolve your identification with it. You can learn to observe your thoughts and rise above them. That's what mantras are for. They are to carry you beyond the mind. Okay. So what about memory? Scientists have been unable to locate the source of memory. Right. Because they're only looking for memory in the physical brain. And memory has its repository in the causal body. The causal body is a refinement of the astral body. Sometimes they're seen as a whole. But memory exists in the causal body, which is not in the physical. The causal body holds a collective memory of every individual's many lifetimes, in which it has been called, in the Bible, for example, God's Book of Remembrance, or the Akashic Records. Within the Akashic Records, within the causal body, the karmic seeds of every action are stored. So, those of you who are causal plane initiates or have passed through the causal plane of initiation are clearing that causal body of your personal record and karma as you chant the names of God. That's what's the purpose of a mantra or your initiatory tone is meant to do. It's to eat, consume, clear, dissolve the seeds of your previous actions that were not fully aligned with the truth of being. So as you do, as you chant, your memories, in other words, your karmic imprints, dissolve into higher awareness. And bear in mind, with that dissolution, your old memories, both conscious and subconscious, began to dissolve. So those of you who are finding, like I am, just whole blocks of your life missing all of a sudden, that's why that level is being cleared. So shout hallelujah and don't think you're going into dementia. That's not the case. No, the plug is being pulled on obsolete, unnecessary clutter, consciousness clutter, that you don't need to do anything more with but dissolve into truth. So memory, aside from functional memory of how to drive your car and make your way to work and so forth and take care of your responsibilities, memory clutter does nothing but revivify and recycle useless data in life after life until eventually it's dissolved through your spiritual practice. And sometimes people would ask, well, does that mean we lose our precious memories, our good memories? And no, because the collective Akashic record still remains at the causal level and plane. And you can always tap into that if need be or you want to. Only now, you see, you've transcended the attachment to time-bound experiences of all kinds and live in the eternal now, creating out of your true godlike nature an inherent bliss with no pull from the past to hinder or distract you. So it's a good thing. You never lose what is of true value. You just lose what's obsolete, unnecessary, and not doing you any good. So with full realization, I think one just laughs at the whole thing, realizing one has been the dreamer of all these dreams and the player of all these parts in this grand leela, this play of consciousness. And one enters a state wherein you have a feeling of being everything, everywhere, everyone, and at the same time completely empty. And equally, nothing and no one. One simply is, delighting in existence itself and creative expansiveness. So, a simple practice we can all do as we move through our daily life is to live above the level of thought, in the sense of so often people are running a constant evaluation, critiquing, and judging as they go about their daily life. That's the mental chatter that you learn to rise above, so that you can live actually with greater awareness of who you are as the observer. You rise to that level just above thought, where you're just looking and watching. Nothing else is going on there. So apart from our thoughts, our emotional variations, or the physical condition, we reside as that conscious awareness that simply observes, watching and listening from above the physical drama. We learn to notice without reacting, to allow what is to be, whatever it is, without need to get hooked into it, mentally or emotionally. And you'll find you have far greater efficiency at work and have far more energy when you operate from a centered place of non-reactive awareness. The stress level just vanishes because everything that's happening is none of your business. If it involves anybody but your own self, it's none of your business. What God does to the world and with people is God's business, not yours. So when you operate from this higher state, your relationships will be more pleasant and stress-free. When you don't expect, demand, or insist anything from anyone, you accept where they are, and you take responsibility for making yourself and your life happy and fulfilled, apart from what anyone else says or does. That's none of your business. That's for them to work out. So, neediness is what pushes others away, as well as a possessive stranglehold of demands and expectations. People will absolutely flee a relationship that they sense is pressuring and confining them. So the immortals remind us to fully participate and contribute to life. In no way are we to disidentify with material forms, except to realize that they're not who we are, but are vehicles of manifestation, nor are we to abstract ourselves from conscious participation in creation and creative endeavor. We are, every one of us here as souls, to express our unique creativity at each level of existence, not just the physical. But when you're in the physical, this is the only place where all of your multidimensional levels can be present and anchored at the same time. Tremendous value to having a physical anchor point. So we're here to impart our own unique soul signature and make our mark on existence. Ultimately, we learn to create as divine creative individuals from our bliss body, or Ananda Kosha. It's also called a Sambodhikaya by the Buddhists. There's other names for it too. The Jalus, or the rainbow body, or the diamond body, or the Vajra body, thunderbolt body. There's many, many terms for this extended sense of presentation, or vehicle of manifestation, and that's what we learn to move into. We're constantly upping our, let's say, vehicle of manifestation. Now, I'm going to speak about something that's rather esoteric, but my gosh, is it important. So bear with me. Take a deep breath. The immortal masters have described how to attain their state. First of all, by not believing in any limitations whatsoever, neither of time, space, matter, or within the world, anything that the world would tell you is impossible. You have to learn to not buy into that. And it holds forth a lot of, let's say, teachings about what is and isn't possible. But just know that with God, all things are possible. All things. No limitation. So that's the first thing that they teach, and help a person to enter that stress-free, limitless state of consciousness that is so blissful. It's so transcendent of the way we normally think and operate in this world. And then they speak of three nadis or nerve channels that operate as we begin to operate through the higher chakras, let's say, crown chakra specifically. There are three nadis or nerve channels. The God nadi or Deva nadi, the expansive consciousness or sustaining creative consciousness, or Prati nadi. Pra means to expand. And the liberation or Moksha nadi. So that's the God nadi, the expansive consciousness nadi, and the liberation nadi. And all three must be expressed and not one only at the expense of the others. And this is why. If we focus on the God or Devi nadi, we'll tend to separate, isolate, and distance ourselves from active participation in life and with others. And that, you see, deprives one of the necessary relationships which form the basis of life itself. We're always relating to consciousness, to energy, to the flows of spirit, which is an extremely dynamic state. And soul has come here in this dimension of physicality to have experiences within polarity and diversified approaches and duality. We understand things here by their opposite. So you have to get involved in life, not separate from life. Now, the second nadi. If we use only the expansive creative consciousness, or Prati nadi, we'll be expanding and creating, but chances are we'll become attracted and attached to our creation and entrapped thereby. We tend to become very possessive of what we consider our creation. So if you go by that one strand of approach, there again, you trap yourself. So we need to keep aware of what we're setting into motion and learn to be a conscious divine co-worker and co-creator without personal attachment to our creation, nor the fruit of our endeavors. So we must learn to live free of personal investment and expectations as to the results or outcome of anything that we're doing. Very important. The next nadi, the liberation or moksha nadi, has a very surprising outcome if pursued at the exclusion of the other two nadis. And this is where non-dualism or Advaita is taken way too far. This is where one enters into a state of formless, absolute absorption which is a non-experiential formlessness. And this leads to what has been called Nirodha Pralaya. In other words, it's like you're tuned out and turned off, and you're just in a state of stasis or quiescency that is non-productive, non-creative, and just, you're just hanging out there in formlessness, but nothing else is going on. And the point is not to dissolve into formless essence. Or, as what sometimes people are held out to as the objection, to merge and become one with God. This is so, so, so tricky. You don't merge with the absolute formless it of itself. I mean, that sounds good, doesn't it? But here is the thing. Be careful for what you ask, as you just might get it. Far wiser to ask only for what is your highest and most divinely directed good. The truth is this. You really have no idea what you truly need, nor what is truly of value, nor what anything really is for, because 99.9% of the time, it is the mind that is deciding and choosing, and the mind is incapable of seeing anything as it truly is. The mind is simply a recycling trap. You have to get above the mind, above the level of thought, into simply that state, higher awareness, to really see. So what happens when one becomes fanatical about dissolving into the formless non-duality is a state of absolute monism, which is stasis. Nothing happens. One becomes entrapped in formless stasis. You could say that would be the polarized opposite of genuine God consciousness. So there is a lot of talk in the various spiritual groups and circles about becoming one with God, or merging one's individuality into the one source essence. However, that's not the way, according to the Immortal Masters. Consciousness has not spent eons developing authentic individuality to have it all vanish into an amorphous mass. No. What would have been the point of the divine plan if all this unfolding of consciousness was to add up to zero? What we are to do is to go into the bliss body, or the Ananda Kosha, or the Zohar body, as it's described in the Keys of Enoch, which I guess I'll have to describe for you an experience I had of that, which I just found out what that meant. I was in a private car driving on my way to see Sai Baba in Puttaparthi, sometime in the 1980s, maybe 82 or 85. I had been stranded in Singapore for a week because there was a dreadful flood in Madras, and I was told I couldn't get out of Singapore for maybe 2 months. And I said to Swami, and Swami, by the way, Sai Baba, had told me I was going to die. So I said, okay, that's fine, but at least let me have your darshan, let me see you before I die. So, as wonders would have, one seat was vacant with the head of the Sai Baba group from Singapore, and the president had been told to reserve that seat because there was a lady that would be needing it, and it happened to be me. So I got the one seat, the one way that I could have gotten out of Singapore during at least the next 2 months. So on the way to the ashram, the driver took a curve too fast. We were looking over an embankment, which below was a construction site with metal spokes or stakes, pylons, sticking up. And the car was beginning to turn over on its side and fall over that embankment. I figured, well, this is it. And I just raised my arms up in the air and I started praising God. I started saying, Om Bhagavan Satya Sai Baba. But I was in a state of absolute ecstasy. There was a very young, slender Indian girl sitting next to me, and she started flying out the window, and the door had been torn off the side of the car. And I just reached over. Everything, you know, goes into slow motion in one of those moments. I reached over in slow motion and just put her back into the seat. I started praising God, telling everyone how wonderful, you know, God is and His grace. And all of a sudden, the next thing I knew, the car was back on the road, right side up, and swerving back onto, you know, the pavement. The people following behind us, which were part of our group, were absolutely shocked out of their mind. They came running. They said, my God, my God, your car was going over the side of the embankment, and just like a big hand just came and put it back on the road. Of course, everybody was a Sai Baba devotee, so we all knew it was Sai Baba. But what happened to me was interesting. At the moment that I was going through what I thought was my last second on the earth, Sai Baba inwardly pulled me, my essence, my spiritual essence, up, my five subtle bodies, up, up, up through the crown of my head, all of my vital airs, as they're called, all of, quote, me, was taken up and out into the bliss body, the Ananda Kosha. And my old life ended for good. That was it. That was finito. There was no more life the same after that. The only sensation I had was a little point at the very top of my crown chakra. So by the time I arrived at the ashram, Baba Zani, the head of the Sai Baba organization at that time, met the car, took one look at me, and put me in a private room in one of the roundhouses, which was built originally for the Maharani, the queen. And the ashram was so packed, and I had gone at such short notice that I thought if I could find a few inches to sleep under a tree within the gates, I will be lucky. But when I looked in the mirror and saw my face, I was as white as a sheet. There was no blood in my face at all. My eyes were brilliant light, and there was just a point of sensation at the top of my head. So I truly did die. That was the end of that which was attached in any way to this world and this body. And yeah, I have to say I've lived in bliss ever since. I really have. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So we are to merge with the divine spirit, the Holy Spirit, the living word, the sound current, the living light, and the living love of God, not the absolute formless Godhead. So you have God transcendent and God immanent, you see. You have God as the Atma, the supreme absolute in the sense of the monad or the I am self. But then you always have that part that is transcendental in which we live and move and have our being, which is Paramatma, the supreme Akshaya, that which is beyond anything we could describe, but which is experienced as living love. So I hope that clarifies a little bit. Now, this higher body, this Sambodhikaya, as it's called by the Buddhists, has also been called the rainbow body or the Jalus. It's also called the diamond body or the thunderbolt body or the Vajra body, There's many, many terms, and the only place you can really get some information about that higher body is in, there's some in the Keys of Enoch by Dr. J.J. Hertak, and then you have to study the Buddhist teachings. They have this down really, really well in terms of understanding the vehicles of consciousness, and particularly how the mind operates and traps us in samsara, and how to create, you know, the clear mind, that spaciousness that Eckhart Tolle speaks of so much. So we are to manifest as co-creative, God-conscious, cosmic beings. We develop what the Master DK has referred to as divine individuality with a capital I. We do not lose individuality. And this is where many, many teachings, they don't go that far. They take you as far as Nirvikalpa Samadhi or Nirvana or the void, and then they drop you there. They don't take you beyond. I think because only the spiritual travelers actually have gone beyond, and they're not that many. So, as my teacher has always taught me to do, whatever it is, go beyond. You think you've found God? Go beyond. You think you've attained enlightenment? Go beyond. Whatever you can see and hear, go beyond. And don't stop. So we are not to obliterate ourselves in nothingness. So, again, when one goes only by the way of the moksha or liberation nadi or nerve channel, one remains in a quiescent, non-creative state and contributes nothing to creation. One disavows any kind of attachment or not attachment, but identification with any forms. That sounds like a good thing, right? But no, not according to them. And what it does is turn one off, and the consciousness remains in a dormant, nothing-at-all state. And all has been not. They've not attained anything spiritually. They've not contributed anything to life or creation. And so they have to return for more incarnations on Earth and start, again, one spiritual approach in a more balanced manner. So one in that self-entrapped state of Nirodha Pralaya, as it's called in Sanskrit, must be found and awakened and returned to life by the immortal masters who do that, and also supervise and guard all souls on their way to realizing their immortality. The advice here, I think, is really clear. And it's to live a balanced life, to participate and express your creativity in life, however you're drawn to. And most of all, to approach your relationship to others in what Sai Baba simply describes as love all, serve all. All is God. God is love. Live in love. Simple, simple, simple. Live in love. And then all the rest will follow. As I said last week, the final enlightenment is in the domain of God. It's not in your hands. You can choose to a certain extent, but like Sai Baba said, you have about as much free will as a donkey tied to a tree. You can graze on the right or the left or around the tree, but you're tied to the tree, okay? So you have a divine destiny to awaken to the fullness, blissful realization of your fullest potential. God has promised that, that not one single soul will be lost, that God loves all of its creation. And so you take care of yourself so that you can help take care of others, and you do your best in life, and you be the best version of yourself you can possibly be, and you offer all of your actions as your love made manifest as your form of worship to God, but you don't reach for the fruit. You have to be like the tree that gives shade and apples to everybody, but the tree does not benefit from its shade, and it doesn't eat its own apples. So you have to be like that tree. But a tree also sheds many, 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 many seeds. So one person attaining enlightenment has made the way a little easier for everyone, because we all ascend and enter reality together. And within time, there's a difference in terms of how we all, you know, come into that. But time is just the illusion that allows for a sequential enjoyment of the whole process. So you're already immortal and have been all along. You just wanted to experience duality and the opposite polarity, and so you have. And when you've had your fill, it will all fall away, and you'll be as you've always been, an immortal, godlike being of radiant light and love. So do live your life exactly as you really wish. Do exactly what you want to do. Of course, bearing in mind the effect that you have on others, you know, be kind, be good, be gracious, be considerate, you know, all of that. But take full responsibility for your own well-being and state of consciousness. And make the best possible use of each moment and every experience. Nothing you will ever experience will not ultimately turn to bless you. I don't care what it is, a happy outcome, to quote Jesus in the Course of Miracles, a happy outcome to all things is assured. So live freely, happily, peacefully, with yourself and others. No stress, no have-tos. Whenever you are stressed, you're trying to let your mind direct you, rather than the love of God. So always choose the love of God, the loving way, the simple way, the innocent way. And have fun. Baba always says, life is a game. Play it. Enjoy it. Live it fully. Life is love. But life is also a dream. Realize it. So love is your true form. Truth itself is your breath, and bliss is your true nourishment. And every time you focus on what you can do to make another happy, to benefit another soul, without a thought that you're going to get something in return, every time you do that, you will experience joy. So if you find yourself in a bad mood or depressed or whatever, get over yourself and try to find something or someone that you can selflessly give service to, that you can bless in some way. And you won't ever enter into depression again. That just will no longer trap you and rob you of present joy. Enjoy life and know that you've always been immortal. You could not be immortal because you're made in the image and likeness of your Creator, immortal life itself. So, I hope this has been helpful to you and not too arcane. There are certain things that many of us need to understand because we've been on this path for a long, long, long time. But as Sai Baba said, until the mind is dissolved, you'll keep coming back here. Because the mind and time itself are the two biggest traps. And with the mind comes the tendency to label. And once you've labeled something, you've kind of nailed yourself into a box. So be nothing. Be nothing. And thus, you are free to be everything as it occurs to you or as it arises. Let go of the labels. Let God define you. That's not your job to define yourself. I offer that to you tonight with my love. Know that you are Sat Chit Ananda, truth, awareness, bliss, forever and ever. So let's hold up our hands and send our blessings to this beautiful creation, to all sentient beings. May you all be happy. May you all have health. May you all have well-being. And let's chant a hue, or Anahue. Let's do Anahue three times and send it to humanity. Deep breath. Blessings and grace to all. Namaste.